This is the Business of Apps podcast, bringing you actionable insights from the leaders of the global app industry and the world's fastest growing apps. You can find more app news, data and analysis over at businessofapps.com.
Welcome to the Business of Apps podcast. On this show, we invite app industry professionals to cover various topics, and we promise to do our best to keep it both insightful but brief. In this episode, we have Brett Orlansky, SVP Product and Sales at Bengo. Brett, welcome to the Business of Apps podcast.
Art, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Terrific. Thank you for coming, Brett. All right. You know, in every industry, there are periods of slow growth when the changes are moving very slow. On the other hand, there are very rapid ones when companies have to adapt quickly and deal with the consequences of those changes to keep up their business afloat. Last April, Apple finally released its ATT framework. ATT stands for App Tracking Transparency. That implies for app marketers to be able to track app users across multiple apps, they need to ask for permission first. This February, Google introduced its Privacy Sandbox for Android with a similar function. All in all, today we've got two major mobile platforms that have drastically changed the app tracking landscape. This is the topic of my conversation today with Brett. But before anything else, Brett, please tell us about your background.
For sure. I have been in the mobile app industry for over 15 years by now. You kind of lose track after a point. Always in the growth marketing side of things, monetization, user acquisition. Prior to that, however, I was actually in the music business. I'm from Los Angeles. I live in San Francisco now, but I used to work at various record companies, Universal Music and Warner Music. But I've made the transition from music to software and then eventually to mobile app marketing, where I am now. And it's been keeping me extremely engaged, constantly learning, and, you know, to kind of bring it to the top, to the points that you were just making. It's been a wild ride very recently. So much has changed so quick, and I think everyone's kind of playing catch up.
That's interesting. I think you're the first guest on the show who came from the music industry to the app marketing. So yeah. I think you still have the thing in your soul for music, right?
100%, 100%. But I will say that the music industry faced some real existential threats, and for a while really did not recover well from it, which is part of the reason I, to be perfectly honest, left. Our industry faces, I don't know if they're quite existential, but they're definitely really, really big challenges. And navigating through them, coming up with creative solutions and unique approaches is what I've been focused on in my career, especially for the past few years.
Yeah, I think I can still remember vividly those huge problems music industry used to have back in the days when iTunes didn't exist. It was, you know, every music record was pirated by somebody. And the story is that, you know, iTunes kind of saved the industry, but there's a flip side. Not every record these days are happy with that, but that's a long story. And definitely it was an existential crisis back in early 2000, I guess, prior iTunes became the thing. Okay, tell us about Bengo a little bit. What you guys do at the company?
Bengo is a company based in the UK, in Cambridge, England. Been around for over 15 years also. Public, traded on London Stock Exchange. The primary business of Bengo is as the payments processor, payment gateway, that allows companies and vendors to push transactions, mobile transactions, to a carrier billing, like go to your mobile phone, your mobile phone bill, like your Verizon or AT&T bill, instead of your credit card. That's Bengo's primary business. It's a little more complicated than that, but from a very high level, that's the business. Part of that processing is that we see and process a lot of in-app payment transactions. We are able to take those in-app payment transactions, anonymize them, segment them, and build them into custom audiences, which we then make into what we call a Bengo audience. These Bengo audiences are deployed on Facebook and offered to other mobile app advertisers who want to find payers in their apps, not merely new users. There's a lot of places to find new users in your apps, a lot of wonderful ad networks, social network platforms, very few places that offer a product that actually allows you to find payers. And at the end of the day, these mobile apps that are monetized with mobile in-app transactions need to find payers. That's what we provide. That's what Bango Audience is. That's what Bango does. My role, the company, is to oversee the product and sales of that product line.
So you're essentially provide the people the ultimate goal of every marketer, find the people who actually are willing to pay for a specific product because they're paying for similar ones. So you have to look. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The notion is that if you, Art, make a payment in one app, you have a higher likelihood of making a similar transaction in a similar app. This is just sort of nature across, not just your in-app behavior, it's across all behaviors of any purchase. This is a category that, I don't know if we've pioneered it, but we are definitely leaders of it. It's purchase behavior targeting. It's a method that allows us to create a product, a Bango audience, mm-hmm. built on purchase behavior rather than things that you like, things that you've searched for. Instead, it's things that you've bought. It makes sense again in all aspects of one's normal life, and then certainly is mirrored in your in-app behaviors as well.
Right, because interests, they may not be that consistent, they may be temporary, but if you're paying for something, if you're basically voting for a specific thing with your money, means that your interest is explicit as can be. So that's the good indicator that these people are essentially interested in this kind of app, this kind of product.
That's exactly right. It's a new signal that we use to build a marketing product on.
All right. Okay, straight to the major question of today's conversation. How privacy changes are hurting app marketers today? What's going on?
It's really the topic that everyone's been talking about in for a while now, that you characterize the changes that happened in 2021 as all of a sudden Apple made these changes and Google made these changes. But in fact, it's kind of been brewing for a long time. And yes, the iOS 14.5 release codified it and made it very, very real, though there was a lot of lot of flags and signals that this was coming. It's a double-edged sword, I think we can say. It's good for the end user in the sense that it gives you more privacy and control over your own data. It's bad for mobile app marketers that use these signals to send you really good ads that you may be interested in. So it's really complicated the situation. It's how we are all responding to it that I think really makes the difference. I mean, if you really want to get cheeky about it, we can kind of think of, you know, this is as a app marketing apocalypse, right? Not an apocalypse like in a end of the world situation, but an apocalypse, which is one of our marketing campaigns, where everything that we have known before has changed, and users that we could find before have turned into zombies. They're unrecognizable. They're hard to find. They're hard to get into your apps. And part of this privacy change, you can kind of extend the analogy that there's actually four horsemen of this apocalypse: cookie deprecation, iOS IDFA deprecations, general government regulation towards privacy regulation, and then the consumer itself, him or herself, who are just more conscious and aware of privacy regulation. So yeah, there's really four pillars of this apocalypse that we're all navigating, not just Bango, all marketers. So it's definitely hurting those marketers who want their apps to get found, installed, and draw in payers.
So yeah, this is what's happening when there is a very established system. People rely on these signals about what's relevant for a specific user using these signals, because there was a tracking. Okay, people are taking specific action in one app, then he moves on to the next, and there is a connection, and you can build a profile of what kind of interactions people have with specific apps. And having this information, you can launch your app acquisition campaign, knowing that, these are the interests of my audience, and I can calculate, I can predict ROI for my campaign. There are signals that were kind of taking as granted, and people felt it's going to be like this forever. But we knew that Apple, there were early signals, like you've said, but I mean, last year, I mean, it was just the like a final step. Okay, it's no more about the future. It's happening right now, and you have to deal with that. So let's talk about a bit of a background, the whole situation. So nothing in this life really comes out of a thin air, out of nothing. There's got to be a reason behind it. So how did we get here?
Wow. It's a good question. I think that there has been a real Wild West approach to mobile marketing. I mean, this is not a new industry. This is not 3 years old. This has been really going on for 15 plus years. And there's been phases around that. Not to go too far back, but when Facebook really sort of exploded on the scene as a viable platform for marketing, they really let anything go. And I think a lot of people grew fat and lazy around just viral marketing campaigns that allowed advertisers to find a ton of users at very low cost. As tracking improved, we could find which channels were delivering best results and pull away from the networks and services that didn't offer high quality, high ROAS users. Again, it's not just a matter of a low cost per install. It's a matter of really getting your return on ad spend as high and as quick as possible. Then with the sort of revelations of how deep and how much information these ad networks have about ourselves, have about us as individual users, I think people became a little bit concerned and perhaps frustrated that some of this data was abused. And that was, I guess, the beginning of the end. This is the question, how did we get here? Where all of a sudden, a lot of people became aware of how much information was available about us that we've volunteered to give up, and really right. how smart Facebook is about the data that we provide. And again, it's not just Facebook, but they're they are the gorilla in the room on this kind of thing. It makes me, you know, the best way of thinking about this is people always worry about, is my phone listening to me, or is Facebook listening
to me? Yeah, exactly.
That sometimes I get an ad that's so eerily on point. And I don't think Facebook or my phone or anything is listening to me. I just think that their algorithms are so darn good that they know and can predict so much about our behaviors even before we realize it. And that is, again, another double-edged sword. I live in San Francisco, and I don't want to get ads for New York Yankees. I want to get ads for the New York Giants, for the San Francisco Giants, right? So I appreciate when the ads are targeted to me. But the reason that works is because the algorithms work. And that's the other side of this.
I think as somebody from our audience watched the movie Social Dilemma, this should have a pretty good picture of what's happening. Like, this is what happening when there were no any regulations in the beginning. Like you've said, just a wild, wild west. We were not aware that information was collecting about us. People were just very thrilled about the functionality of Facebook, how great it is for, you know, communication, and the ads were really nice. There you can see something that was relevant to you. People were like in masses, they didn't realize how exactly it's working. Like, what was the reason behind this high efficiency?
Right.
Now they know, and they understand that much of information that it gave away and may not be, you know, in their best interests. And there's a real dilemma. You do want to get the ads that are relevant to you. This is like not only we guys like on the advertising side are aiming for, but people like wouldn't want to have something that is totally irrelevant to them. But to the best of our knowledge, it's the best way we have to achieve this high efficiency is to have some good chunk of data about you, your interest, to be able to build that system the way that highly relevant to you.
That's right. I really agree with it. I don't feel that way just because that's my industry. I just want a good experience when I'm using Facebook, when I'm watching videos on YouTube. It's just sort of the way advertising works, and it makes for a better experience.
Absolutely. So obviously there's got to be some recipe for our marketers, what they should do right now. What would be their way out of this situation? How they should move forward?
Right. So I think that the way out of it implies that there's a problem. And the problem is the challenge of finding the right type of user for your product. And the reason why that's a challenge is because the connection that was provided by the IDFA is now been broken. So that's the problem. If you are using, if you being an advertiser or were using a product that tracked users based on IDFA, you're in not in trouble, but you're facing this new challenge. This is why we are advocates and proponents of purchase behavior targeting. It's Bango Audiences uses it, but we're not the only notion. We're not the only product or the only company to use this notion. It is really important to embrace tracking or measuring or finding your users based on their purchase history. To the extent you can, to the extent you have access to it, to the extent you want to use our product, that's a really viable way out of this. Using other signals that are not dependent on IDFA or other tracking.
All right. So yeah, that's the essence of what's going on. There's got to be a middle ground. We don't want to give up tracking using signals using information about users at all. Otherwise, the advertising will collapse in terms of its efficiency. It will be rolled back into, I don't know, late 90s, early 2000. But on the other hand, knowing that so much information being accumulated about people, there should be more thorough approach how the information was stored on the side of Facebook, on the side of Google, on the side of advertisers, marketers. The situation kind of reminds me of what was happening when Facebook introduced Facebook pages. People all of a sudden thought that, okay, I'm just going to give up creating my own website, stop using somebody's hosting account, just relying completely on Facebook. Later, they realized that, well, there is a flip side for this coin, and it's not that rosy as they thought at the beginning, giving up creating your own solution, taking care of yourself about your website and just relying on a Facebook page wasn't that great idea. Later on, when the Facebook advertising took off, people started relying on Facebook as a great provider of third-party information. Mm-hmm. And like you've said, we became really lazy in terms of we've kind of offloaded that heavy lifting on Facebook and thought, okay, this is going to be just our third-party provider for ages.
Right
now we have to, kind of back to drawing board and realize that the best way, the more sustainable, the long term way, is actually rely either on some provider that there are other companies on the market, not just Facebook, in terms of gathering data and providing advertising platform. It's just a matter of a more thorough approach to data gathering, handling, and using for advertising.
The app industry is vast. To navigate this space, you need a directory to look up suppliers and partners, and you need to know who are the best. Visit our marketplace directory at businessofapps.com/marketplace/podcast. And now, back to the show.
That's not actually it for the podcast, because there's a second part, and this is the second part where I get a chance to ask every guest on the show kind of quick questions to build a better picture of who they are, to let the audience know my people, the people who come to the show, a little bit better. Sure. Okay, rapid fire quick questions.
I love rapid fire. It's like speed dating. Let's do it.
Oh, all right, let's go. Rock and roll. So question number one, what smartphone do you have now? Have you been switching between iOS and Android, or just staying one line all the time?
I have an iPhone, and I'm pretty loyal to Apple.
Okay, what about your first mobile phone?
I had a flip phone. I had, those Motorola flip phones that I actually...
That one from the Matrix?
Probably even from before then, yeah. I've had a mobile phone for like 20 years. I've had the same phone number for 20 years, 22 years now, maybe even more than that.
Gosh. Okay,
How long have you had your phone number?
Let's see. If I get to remember... I guess, okay, my iPhone, my first iPhone was back in 2011 or something. Yeah, I guess more than 10 years for sure, the same number. So yeah, I've been, switching from one phone to the other, used the same for WhatsApp, Viber. Yeah. So yeah, my phone number kind of the oldest, something you're keeping as long as you don't want to change something that people are sort of people are looking up for you on WhatsApp, thinking that you have the same phone number.
Same number, same hood, it's all good.
Yep. So okay, get back to present. So imagine you've left your home and left your smartphone sitting on your table. What would be the most missing feature for you?
Well, the phone itself, being able to call somebody for help or just to reach out. But I use my phone mostly as a phone, of course. But after that, probably one of the maps. I'm really, really into all the map functionality that smartphones provide.
Yeah, it looks like maps is on people's radar all the time. Like the bulk of the guests on the show, they do point out that Google Maps is one of the essentials. That's part of why App Annie recently released a report saying that Maps was using a smartphone for Maps was like reason number 5 after purchasing, searching and social media. So yeah, that's one of the essentials.
I mean, what I think is really weird is that there's over 2 million apps in the App Store. There's probably about 80 apps on an individual's phone. These are the averages, but you only really use about six of those apps on any given day, which include, your email, your email, your phone, your bank, your game, some sort of communication device, and maybe one other. But that's a crazy funnel, right? To go from 2 million yep. plus to 80 to 6. That's kind of really, in my mind, illustrates the challenge that mobile marketers have.
Yeah, because it's just unavoidable. We're sticking to essentials. We need to communicate with other people. We need to look for information. We need to buy some stuff for our life. And we need to, find our way around when we're out using Google Maps or Apple Maps. That's just, it's just unavoidable. All right. And the final quick question would be this. Is there something, could be hardware, software, or both that you would like in your phone to be able to pull off, and right now it's just not capable of doing that?
I think the general speed and just the core utility of it, just the general speed of my phone. I have an an iPhone 11, and I think it's, I'm looking at it now, just kind of reminiscing and when it was really, really quick, and it's not. So I think that's probably the fact that these things go obsolete in 2 years. That's one thing that bugs me a lot about it, and that I think that I would be more excited if obsolescence wasn't so built into the product.
Yeah, that's one of the major issues with smartphones these days. This is the reason why people do change their phones for the most part, like every 2 years or so, because precisely for the same reason, today it feels like, blazingly speedy. In 2 years, gosh, I really should think about the new one.
My kid has an iPhone 13, and it's like, it can run laps around my phone. So
amazing. All right. And before I let you go, just very final question would be this. How can people get in touch with you and get more information about what you do, Brett?
Happy to talk to everybody out there. Brett, Brett, at Bango, Bango.com. Brett@Bango.com.
Terrific. Thank you for coming. And thank you for being on our show, Brett. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Art. Bye-bye.
All right. And that was Brett Orlansky, SVP Product and Sales at Bango. To listen to more episodes, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts. Just search for Business of Apps and you will find us easily. We release episodes on Mondays, so subscribe, and you will be able to get new episodes on your smartphone, tablet, or computer as soon as we release them. And please don't forget to leave us a review or comment on iTunes. It is highly appreciated. And all episodes will also be available on businessofapps.com. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Apps podcast. For more, head on over to businessofapps.com.